So today, we are going to talk about the earth, all right? Tend the earth. Bob Dylan once said, times are a-changing. And some could say that this is also the planet. The planet is a-changing. You know, you have environmental alarmists saying the world is melting, everything's being destroyed, it's going to end any moment now. And then you have the other side that's saying nothing's changing, right? We call them climate change deniers, right? So you have environmental alarmists and climate change deniers. And nothing's changing. Everything's the same. Nothing's going on. And if you're just like the normal person, it can be difficult to navigate. Because you have people who you don't know at all. Most of us have not really researched it for ourselves. And research it for ourselves means not reading someone else's research, right? And so you're reading two people who are experts in their field who are saying completely different things. How do you know what to do, right? Are we all going to melt or are we just going to stay the same? What's going to happen? And it seems to me that so often we would rather argue and fight than find common ground. And so here's what I have to say. Whether you are on one side or the other, or you're stuck in the middle with me, I believe the scripture teaches us something about the earth and something about how we are to care and how we are to interact with it. So if you want to follow along today, you can do so on the YouVersion Bible app, or you can go into our app, go to Message Events, and find the content on there. But today we're going to look at two verses, and these are from the two creation accounts found in Genesis, Genesis 1 and 2. And there's Bibles there. You can look those up in as well. We do have them on the screens today. And these scriptures are what is called the cultural mandate. So these are like the first commands ever given by God to the people on, these are just first commands. This is what you do. So here we go. Genesis, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in numbers. I can get behind that one, right? Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And then in Genesis 2, the second account, it says, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden, to work it and take care of it. So this is, again, what we call the cultural mandate. And this is the commissioning of Adam and Eve to subdue, to rule, to work, and care. All right? So these are terms that we get from the very beginning. And I think sometimes we forget about these commands, right? Especially in the Christian church, we jump straight to the Great Commission or to Jesus' teaching. You know, what are the greatest commandments? Jesus says, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor. We jump to those and we forget often about these very first commands. That God invites us into what he has or what he has created. He invites us into the process. The Apostle Paul says to the church in Colossae 4, in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. So the world has not only been created by Jesus, but for Jesus, and he invites us into the process. So he invites us in, and the call goes out for us to subdue, rule, work, take care. Now, what does that mean? So when we look at the Hebrew and we try and get some more clarity on what these words are, we see the word subdue. It could also mean bondage, press, oppress and beat, or make a path. Okay? So this is like, it's like this idea of restraining, pressing. Then we see the word rule. dominate. Okay, so we see Genesis 1 has these very strong terms of what we are to do. And then next, we have the word work, which means to serve. So Genesis 2, we see kind of a turn in terminology. It says serve. And then also in Genesis 2, it says take care of. And take care of means keep watch and preserve and to be a watchman. Okay, to be a watchman. So we have subdue, rule, work, and take care of. Now, these appear to be, some say that these are two different accounts, and sometimes they can appear to be. And when we look at the language of how we are to tend the earth, these two accounts can seem almost contradictory, right? One's like, press the earth and beat it down, make it submissive to us. And the other's like, serve the earth, watch over it. One you could see, construction worker, rah! And the other one, Kelly, right? Flowers, right? Forests, right? And you're like, whoa, how did these two come together? How do we make sense of this? You know, we subdue and rule. These terms can sound negative, but how do we interpret these words? We interpret them through the lens of a broken world. We interpret them through the lens of a post-fall language. And I would say that we are to look at them in very different terms. I believe if we look at this prior to the fall, Genesis 1 and 2 are very different stories than what comes after Genesis 3, after Adam and Eve invite sin into this world. Jim Ball writes, yet this granting of dominion in Genesis 1 occurred before the fall in Genesis 3, before we became warped images, distorted reflections. You know, people do use Genesis 1 as the reason that they can suck the marrow out of the earth. Let's use and abuse. Let's take every ounce out. We are called to dominate the earth. We are to put it into bondage. It is ours. Let's clear all the trees. Let's pollute all the oceans. Let's kill all the whales. Let's milk all the dolphins. They're mammals. You can do it. I know it's weird. But this word bondage prior to Genesis 3, prior to a fall, is more the idea of tending to. So here's what you may not know about plants, or maybe you do. Plants like to spread, right? Have you noticed dandelions? They like to spread. Trees, they do it. They spread. Grass, we wish it would spread more, right? Plants, they like to spread. They also like to dominate. And this is in a negative sense. I don't know if you know this, but trees, they look all peaceful and nice above the ground. But underground, their root systems are attacking every other tree that is not of their species, trying to kill the other one. They make those sounds. Well, they actually do make those sounds. Believe it or not, I think you can find it online. Right? And they are willing to kill anything in its path. So to dominate doesn't mean that to put in bondage, to tend. It doesn't mean that we chop down all the trees. It means that we protect the little birch that the oak is trying to crush. It means we help the pine tree that just wants to spread every limb toward the sun, though it will break under the weight of snow. It means we tend, we protect. It means we don't let the dandelions kill all my beautiful grass. So if you want to come, spread seed, pick all the dandelions, I'd be appreciative. There's a lot. Maybe make soup. You know, God calls us to cultivate, protect, and set up boundaries. Okay? Set boundaries. This is what subdue means. It means a care for. We protect. It's not about plowing under. It's about making sure that life and vitality can spread. And the word rule is much the same. It's not about injustice. That's a post-fall. We need to think of it pre-fall. We need to think of it through who Jesus is. It's benevolent. It's perfect. The reality is, when God placed us on the earth, Adam and Eve, they were perfect rulers. But then perversion corrupted them, and it corrupted this world. We need to see the word rule through the lens of who Jesus is. Jesus' form of ruling is serve. Jesus' form of subduing is defeating evil. Isn't that what he comes to do? He says, I have not come over to rule, but to serve. Right? I've come to defeat evil. And so this is what we are called to do also in creation. And it should bring to mind maybe a certain phrase. If we were to sum it up, give a hoot, don't pollute. Right? Who remembers those commercials? My wife doesn't. I didn't realize she was so young. This is sum it up. Sum it up. Give a hoot, don't pollute. We have been given a charge to take care of. If you think about it in a house, think of it like a house. How do you tend a home? Do you eat like food and then just like throw it on the floor, right? Everything, we just throw it on the floor. That's whatever, we don't care what happens. We just throw it wherever we want. Do you know the people who do that? Children who don't know any better, right? Let's just go. People with some psychosis issue, right? They're hoarders, right? They got boxes everywhere. There's like dead cats in the corner. Seriously. I remember when we moved to Orillia, the price market from where we lived in Wallaceburg to Orillia was like $100,000. And so we were like looking at homes. You would not believe the stuff. So a lot of these people were hoarders. You'd pull back the door and dead things. Like, anyway, right? Like, we look at that and that's not normal. But yet, as we approach the world, we don't treat it as though it's our home so often. We are okay to litter it. God's call is for us to carefully and thoughtfully look at the resources that he has given us and to use them properly. Right? So it's not about not using the resources, but how do we do that responsibly? How do we cultivate? How do we tend? Right? So maybe you want to milk a dolphin. Go ahead, but do it in a responsible way. Our survival depends on agriculture. We need food to live, yet agricultural lands are threatened by desertification, land degradation, and drought. 12 million hectares, the size of Mississippi, of agriculture are lost each year. Globally, half of all agricultural lands is moderately or severely degraded. The poorest are most vulnerable, with 74% suffering from land degradation. It doesn't sound like we're giving a hoot. It sounds like we find ourselves on the wrong end of the word dominate. And it's a selfish domination. It's not tending, we are taking. So, you know, whether you find yourself on this, you know, when it comes to the science, whether you find that it's clear or whether you find that it's murky, it doesn't actually change anything. Because whether the climate is changing or not has nothing to do with responsible resource use, caring for plants and animals, and making sure we are not polluting the earth. We may disagree on what to do, but it doesn't change the fact that we are to do something, that we are to tend. We are called to be stewards of the earth, stewards of endangered species and oceans and forests and harmful chemicals that go in our food and water. These are things, they're not even good for us. But we're so quickly look for quick solutions instead of doing what's necessary. You know, it's not always about what can we do to affect the whole world. That's sometimes an unrealistic expectation that we can put on ourselves. But what can we do with our portion of the earth? That's what we need to ask ourselves. So we live in North America, right? Wealthy, some of the wealthiest countries, well, two of us, wealthiest countries in the world. And Northern Hemisphere countries, we have lots of money and resources. And for the most part, we have clean waters and fairly clean planet. You know, we're not Singapore, but we can forget what the rest of the world is. And we can think, well, we are doing so well compared to other people. But the wealthiest countries in the world are responsible for, like, the vast majority of CO2 emissions. So what can we change there? Well, solar and wind, very little impact on the environment. You know, we can think, well, fossil fuels, they have saved trees. The reality is, in some ways, yes, it is. We have more trees now than we did 100 years ago. But just because there's more trees doesn't mean that that's the solution. There are other ways. And God invites us into the solution. He says, you can come in, you can be the solution, as well as find the solution. Because the reality is, if we don't find solutions to these, the consequences are catastrophic. Global warming will increase hunger and malnutrition by damaging rain-fed agriculture. And the amount of agricultural land experiencing extreme drought will grow from 1-3% today to 30% by 2090. Tens, perhaps hundreds of millions will experience increased risk of hunger and malnutrition. And we think, oh, well, 2090, that's far away. Well, it's not that far away. That's 70 years. Is there anyone here over 70? You don't have to put your hand up. Right? But, like, that's your lifetime. That's your lifetime. That's my kid's lifetime. I hope my youngest lives to 73 at least. Right? Well, how are we caring, moving this forward? We have to ask ourselves, have we maintained the goodness? If God created everything good, and he has called us to tend and watch over and take care of, have we maintained the goodness? We have species that don't exist. We have animals and plants. We have things that no longer are edible because of the chemicals. We have diseases that have come into our life because of how we've treated the planet. I believe that this may be a hard question, but given what Genesis 1, I believe this is the mandate that we've been given. This should be our goal, to tend the goodness. Now, developed countries, we are responsible for the global warming. That's the reality. But developing and underdeveloped countries, now developing has a lot of issues with the CO2 because they're not able to scrub their chemicals. But underdeveloped and developing countries have extreme pollution. And some of that is packaging. They have all the same products we have with all the same packaging that we got, but they have no way to take care of it. Not that our ways are all that great. And so I can show you pictures from Malawi when we were in Kayuma. There's just trash everywhere. There's no garbage pickup. It's just everywhere. We ship our, I don't know if you know this, we ship our recycling to, like, China, and they won't take it anymore because they don't have room for it, and so they're not doing anything with it. They're just burning it. This is stuff that's happening. Here's what Ron Snyder says. Developing nations often use less sophisticated technology and consequently consume fossil fuels less efficiently. Desperately poor people also try to farm marginal land and destroy tropical forests. I don't know if you know this, but there is an epidemic of deforestation that's happening in Africa right now. They are just plowing everything under, trying to make their country more able to handle tourists, and in order to build factories, to build things cheaply, to raise the status of their country, to build jobs. But meanwhile, here in North America, we sit idly by. We watch them do all this stuff. Essentially, they rape their land, unable to even farm the small bit of farmable land that they have. And they make a lot of the same mistakes that we made before, and we just watch them. And a lot of this is because it's good for us to keep them in poverty. It helps our products. It helps us get our clothes cheaper in these countries through Asia and Africa. It helps us get our fruit and some foods. It helps us take cheap vacations if we can keep them below the poverty line. As a person's livelihood increases, their pollution footprint decreases. This is what we see. The scriptures clearly tell us to take care of the poor. And it turns out that as we take care of the poor, what ends up happening in this day and age is that we end up taking care of the planet at the same time. Help the poor, you end up saving the planet as a side effect in some ways. Snyder writes about the power of Christians. Imagine we could refuse to let our affluent world squeeze us into its consumeristic mold. Instead, we could become generous nonconformists who love Jesus more than wealth. In obedience to our Lord, we could empower the poor through generous giving, community development, and better societal systems. And in the process, we would learn again his paradoxical truth that the true happiness flows from generosity. You know, whether you are earthy or not, it doesn't change the mandate to tend the earth. And as Christians, one third of us, if we just try to take care of our little piece, if we try to focus on maybe our politicians, if we focus on what we can do to help the poor across the earth, little pieces at a time, we could make a substantial difference. We are called to care from the earth. Because after all, we are a part of it. Adam, the word Adam comes from the Hebrew word dirt. The difference being that we have been created in the image of Elohim, the God of creative works, and he has invited us into his creation to take care of it and tend for it. He said that we are to be watchmen and not the superheroes. We are called to be watchmen, to watch over this earth and tend it. Paul, to the church in Rome, said, "We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time." And I believe that the earth is groaning. It's groaning for this, the effects of sin, to leave it alone. It's crying out to us. And we have to decide whether we want to carry the mantle or not. The mantle that we've been gifted with, that God has entrusted and given to us to tend and care for, to do, to serve, to watch over the earth. All right, question response time. We have a question, clarity, maybe push back, something. We have a mic here.
I just wanted some clarification on the quote by Ron Snyder at the end. So it talked about one quarter of the world's Christians. Would that be that he's referring to the Christians in the developed world that then basically make these changes that impact the entire world, or do you know?
I think he's taking the number of all the Christians in the world, which is like over a billion, take one third of them. And if they decided to make a change, like think of the dramatic change it could be. And now, his book is about the poor, but and he addresses the environment in that quite a bit, actually. Because I don't think we realize how connected the poor and pollution are. Like, they really do feed each other, right? The the earth becomes bad. So then they cannot have food. So they cannot sell. So they come poor, which caused them to make more pollution. So anyway, I believe that's what he's referring to. And as if we can go and if some, he's not even saying one third move in. He's saying if one third did something. So part of those thirds moved into communities to help. And then the other third of the third, the sixth. Is that right? I'm not math. Although I did do grade 10 twice. I liked it so much. You know, it could help. It could help them live in those and change. Yeah. Especially like, I don't know if anyone, has anyone ever been to Africa? Got a couple people? Yeah? Like, it is beautiful there. And like, especially, you know, where I was in Malawi, it is so lush and green. And like, they have a big body of water there. Like, there's so much potential, yet it really is, if you really look into politics, the Northern Hemisphere really does like to keep everyone else down, because if it comes up, it will change the way we live our life. Right? It has to equal out. So, oh, the other expert.
Yes. Hello.
They happen to be married.
Not a question this time. It's actually a statement, if that's allowed. I don't know, I personally, I think that so much of this comes back to consumption. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it relates a lot to what you're talking about with, you know, serving the poor or helping the poor, because we consume so much that seems to drive all of these other ill effects that are happening, because we're demanding, there's this demand for more and more and more, and people will do whatever it takes to find ways to provide for that demand. So they'll cut corners, whatever ways are, you know, that they can, and to do it more cheaply and to exploit people who are already down. And yeah, it just seems to snowball. So to me, so much of it comes back to what our personal decisions are in terms of what we consume, how much we consume. And if we're consuming less, then there's more, theoretically, more money for us to give to others, and there's more resources that haven't been consumed by us that can be shared with others. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and saying that, though, it's even a catch-22, because these people's livelihood, we consume less, then they make more, then they look at, I think, yeah, we do have to consume less, but we also have to demand equal care for those people working, right? Right? Like, it's, there's so many variables, but we have so much power as consumers. Yeah.
So I really think we export our labor to other countries, and that is a problem. And accommodate this, we pack everything in plastic. So when I was a little child, 1960s,
whoa, that's a long time ago.
Everything that you bought was just bound in paper. You went to the butcher, he wrapped your meat in paper, your groceries came out in paper bags and everything. The amount of trash you produced was minimal. And just last year, I worked in a dumping ground that was produced in the 60s and 70s. And this was like a 20-year pit for a village. And how little trash was actually in that because of the way we consume things today. Like, nobody refurbishes, everything's disposable, right? And everything, plastic, styrofoam, all those things, it's garbage. We don't have the mindset to do it. So we struggle with providing jobs within our market, because we're buying from China, India, Mexico, wherever, and everything has to be plasticized to be kept in a suitable way for us to purchase it and to give it support for shipping. And shipping these products, we ship raw materials from Canada to India to bring it back again. It's so absurd. Well, we had a good example at Faith Tabernacle. There was a machine that one of the guys there builds to make plastic containers for cookies. And that plastic container was produced in Chester. The machine was shipped to India, and it made the plastic containers for the cookies. Now, these containers were sent to Australia to put the cookies in. They were put in the bag, and they were then bought here in our superstore. So for, you know, $1.298, we just circumvent the globe and how many tons of oil was spent doing that instead of just going to the bakery and letting somebody bake some cookies for us in our neighborhood. Like, it's so bizarre. So,
yeah. Like, so even tuna. Try and buy Canadian tuna. This is the headache of my life. You cannot buy tuna from Canada in Canada. You can only buy it from Malaysia. And all our tuna goes over there, and all their tuna comes over here. Why? Keep your own tuna. We both have tuna. Keep it. Right? They make more money over there, but still. I just want my own tuna. Okay. That's my... All right. Yes. Last one.
Mine's just a comment. So... when you have kids and you're trying to teach them how to recycle and all that stuff, they don't think it's very important. They don't understand it. They don't want to learn it or whatever. But when they start to grow up and realize how important it is to recycle, they kind of feel like, you kind of feel like you've done a good job. So my oldest is 18 now, and he has a job. And he's been working for Green for Life for a few weeks. And he's also had 2 weeks at Miller Recycling, so he's definitely dealing with garbage, right? Whether it be picking it up off the road, and now with the last
two... Or being a teenager.
And now the last 2 weeks, he's been at the Miller Compost, like, literally going through the compost bins and separating it, and it's disgusting. And the change that I've seen in him with regards to, oh, I understand now why you're recycling, it's unreal. So I feel like when you... It takes a ripple to start the little bit of a difference that you can do in your own home. It will ripple. It might not impact the world because that is a big thing for us to carry. But it just starts with a little thing, right? And so the little thing is, we teach our child, they learn in school, we follow up as parents, and eventually they do get it, that it's important to recycle. So I just thought I had to share how proud I was that he's like, man, I can't believe what they're throwing out, and I understand why you're at me all the time. So I feel like I did a good job because now he knows what it's like.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. The reality is whether the icebergs are melting or not has nothing to do with whether you're throwing a plastic bag somewhere that's going to stay around for years. Some bird might get into it and die, right? All right. The point. One, we need to take responsibility. Take responsibility for ourselves. Really, isn't that what the Bible clearly communicates over and over again? Things are not all right. Take responsibility, right? And so with salvation, we invite God to help us. We invite Jesus' sacrifice to make us right. Well, he now invites us into the process that we can help be saviors of this planet. We can help the bird and the whale and the dolphin and the tree and the... not the dandelion, but two, we need to manage our resources, right? Like, it's about being responsible. It's not about never cutting any trees down. We would be overrun. But how do you do it responsibly? How do you do it not just consuming and consuming and consuming? We are gluttonous in our consumption of things. Three, reduce, reuse, recycle, in that order. Despite the song that they used to sing when I was a kid, recycle, reduce, reuse. No, it's reduce, reuse, right? We need to reduce what we use. Then we need to reuse what we do have, right? So you buy margarine or butter, and it comes in a plastic container. Reuse it, right? Or don't, or buy butter and buy your own cow. Buy your own cow, make your butter, right? Let's get a community cow. We can all, funny joke about that. When I lived in, when I lived in Wallaceburg, it's a farming community, right? Lots of farms. Everyone is a farmer. And these people invited me to their house. They had like 7 daughters. I think they were trying to marry me off because they never invited me after I got a girlfriend. But they invited me over to the house and they said, "Now listen, hopefully the mashed potatoes are okay." I went out to milk the cow and the udders were dry. And I realized I used all the milk to make yogurt. So I just used the yogurt in the mashed potatoes. And they were a little funky, but it wasn't too bad. Anyway. But we need to reduce, reuse, and recycle. And 4, exploit. Whether it's exploit other people, exploiting the earth, exploiting other countries. You know, if we just do not exploit people, that is huge towards our consumption. Huge. It helps their economy as well. It helps them care for the poor. It helps us care for this earth. So let's pray. Lord, help us to be stewards as you've called us to, knowing that our natural bent in this world is to follow our selfish desires. It's crying out for us to consume, 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 feel good, feel good, feel good. And we know that it is wanting. It leaves us wanting. So Lord, help us to lean on your strength, your grace, and your love. To not be people of the flesh, but to be people of the Spirit. You called us to be children of God. Help us to live like it. And that means to care for our little piece of earth that we have. To do what we can to make life better for each other and for this planet as a whole. Help us to care for the poor, to take care of the trees, to watch over the animals who cannot defend themselves from our reckless behavior. Help us, Lord. Help us, Lord. Give us strength to resist. And just, I pray that we would step into the great creativity that you've sown in us in how to solve the problems. Lord, help us to hear each other's voices in the midst of these debates and not write each other off and not say, "Oh, you belong in this camp," but come together. Where can we make a difference together? What can we see as the common ground that is wrong that we can put our powers together, in the words of Captain Planet, put our powers together to see a change happen? And I believe is for your glory. In your holy name, Lord, amen.